One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Oh, for goodness sake, just make the decision. How often have those words been uttered over the course of human history and so on? It does seem that when it comes to making decisions, though, it can lead to high levels of stress, high levels of anxiety. The recent survey suggesting that 42% of us feel that we're making more decisions than ever, obviously ramping up that stress and anxiety factor. So let's try and begin to address this with two fabulous folk. First of all, decision-making expert who studied the whole process of decision-making over the years, Dr. Bryony Pulford. How are you, Bryony?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
I'm delighted you made the decision to actually take part in this interview today, because that's another stressful aspect for that, as indeed as we are about a leading expert in money decisions from, of course, ClearScore, who commissioned this report, Sarah Meginson. How are you, Sarah?
Hi, I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. So let's turn to yourself, Bryony, to start off with. I mean, clearly nobody likes to make the wrong decision. And that whole notion of, well, it doesn't matter because in the cosmos, you make one decision one way, you go another way. But there are these turning points, these sliding doors moments that everybody kind of feels, let's make the right decision. And does that also ramp up the question of anxiety that we also feel as well?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to feel anxious when we feel like the decisions are really important. We've been doing research to look at how anxious people are feeling, especially recently during the pandemic, and how that compares to before the pandemic. So we did a survey, and a lot of people now are feeling very anxious. Only about a quarter of people consider themselves to be decisive. So the vast majority are feeling rather undecisive.
And allowing for that indecision, though, I mean, sometimes it's actually time to, or quite good and preferable to have a few moments to reflect on the decisions that we actually make, even if it's a case of a fairly trivial one, such as, do you actually have a cafe latte or a mineral water on a morning?
Yeah, we need to reflect on decisions that are important, but some decisions, like, in coffee shops can be very complex because we're overwhelmed with choice. Some choices are not that important, like which coffee we get, but we get too many options and we feel overwhelmed by them. There's something called choice overload. And actually presenting people with fewer options often makes them feel more sure in their decision making.
Well, it's an old line we've used many a time from the old Buddhist teaching that where there is choice, there is misery. But let's look at Generation Z or Generation Z, and in particular, the fact that they're being asked frequently to be making choices around their own personal finances, which many of them say is more stressful than choosing to break up with someone or indeed asking for a pay rise. I mean, Sarah, from your own perspective, is this something which you were surprised at, or did you think, yeah, actually, at the end of the day, when it's sorting out money, that's the most stressful choice of all?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to money and making financial decisions, you know, there are so many different options. And I think that especially in the past 2 years, it's been very difficult for everyone, but especially when it comes to finances. And when you talk about the world of credit, it's super complicated and very uncertain as to how people can maybe improve things like their credit score and get access to better credit options. So this is why I think that, you know, financial decisions are one of the most difficult to make.
Bryony, you have three key suggestions in terms of ways to actually eliminate stress or at least reduce stress, etc. And they relate to obviously reducing the number of decisions you actually need to make, get suitable advice, and of course, be open-minded. Would you say that's the holy trinity of steps to actually take in terms of making sure that we don't get stressed about finances?
Oh, well, they're the three tips that I came up with for this report based on the information about what people were feeling stressed about in relation to their finances. So, yeah, try to reduce decisions if possible. You know, get advice, get guidance, get information from websites, from friends, from family, because that will help you get different perspectives on the problem, on the decision. because we don't always see things clearly. We need other people's perspectives on things. And actually, an interesting piece of research shows that even if we just try to think about a decision from somebody else's perspective, that can help us, you know, even without asking them. So if we just go, I wonder what my mother would say to this problem, that helps us see it from a new perspective and helps us feel more certain.
The old classic line of what would Captain James T. Kirk do in this instance, or indeed whatever character you wish, just a thought there. I mean, if we actually uttered the words, what would Sarah Meginson do in this instance? Presumably you'd say, get a clear score check sorted out immediately. It does help.
Yeah, I mean, I would obviously advise to download the app or go and check your credit score and report. I mean, it's free. Why would you not do it in that instance? But I mean, ultimately, it's super important to make those decisions. If you don't know, you know, if you're going to be accepted for a financial product or not, it makes it a very difficult decision to make. But at ClearScore, we've introduced things like eligibility checking. So, you know, you can see before you actually apply and before that impacts your credit report that actually you are going to be accepted for a product or not.
And indeed, you can also address any issues or mistakes that could actually have occurred as well. So it makes sense as well from that point of view. Bryony, being paralysed by indecision, is that a growing challenge in the 21st century? I mean, with all of our click on this, tablets, technology, all the things that we're actually faced with, is it a case of we're still faced with this whole notion of, you know, conceivably a number of us are indeed really challenged by this, and that whole line we started off this piece with, making a decision can become very troublesome?
Yeah. I mean, there are different types of people. Some people are maximizers and some people are satisficers. And the maximizers will gather information, draw up spreadsheets, and can feel quite overwhelmed by the decision, and maybe not even happy at the end because they know how many options there were. And satisficers, they tend to just gather information until they get one that's good enough. And then they stop searching and they're quite happy with what they found and it's good enough. So one thing you can do is to try to reduce the number of options that you consider if you're a maximizer and if you're just gathering too many options. So, for example, I'm a maximizer and I force myself to go to a shop with more limited range of options. You can guess which one, because otherwise I'd just stand in the very big supermarkets not knowing what to decide between the 300 types of shampoo.
Yeah. A challenging time indeed for maximizers around the world. And where can people actually find out further details, Sarah, about both this report and indeed ClearScore itself?
Yes, so the report, best to just look for Dr. Bryony Pulford, and that report has been published on her website. And to find out more details around you know, making financial decisions, ClearScore, if you download the app or if you look online for clearscore.com.
And how would you define yourself, Sarah? Are you a maximizer or what's your sort of particular personality type when it comes to decision making?
I would definitely say I'm a maximizer when it comes to decision making. I often gather too much information and therefore are paralyzed by all of the different parts of information that I have to process. And even when it comes to simple decisions, I would much prefer those simple decisions to be off the cuff and easy to decide without too much information. But I would definitely say I'm a maximizer in this scenario.
Well, we'll conclude with two of the standard questions that hopefully don't create too much pressure and anxiety. First of all, Dr. Bryony Pulford, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Oh, yes, I have enjoyed it.
That's good. That's a yes from that point of view. And Sarah, what about yourself?
Yes, very much so. It's been a good conversation. Been nice to have that on a Friday morning.
Well, we've made that as the first sort of step, which is fine and dandy. So let's go to the second one. Bryony, will you be kind enough to return?
Oh, definitely. Should you have me? Yes.
And Sarah, is it a yes from yourself or is it a case of I don't know, I'm not sure, where am I going to go?
I feel like I'm going to have to say I'm ClearScore sure that I would return. Yes.
Sarah Meginson from ClearScore and Dr. Bryony Pulford, decision-making expert extraordinaire. Huge thanks. And keep on maximising.
Ha ha ha.
So the question is, are you a satisficer or are you a maximizer? That's the classic line from Dr. Bryony there, and of course Sarah. Interesting, and something which will lead directly into our next guest, who is the awesome actor and general all-round fantastic artist, Jonathan Lindsley. Jonathan, we were just talking there with Dr. Bryony and Sarah, who was basically explaining the stresses that young people are faced with these days, the stresses in terms of choice. There's too much choice. And as many people would actually say, where there is choice, there is misery, or at least I think it was the Buddhist perspective. So just from that perspective, where would you pitch yourself in that whole scheme of things? Would you be a maximizer, somebody who actually goes for the sort of the greatest number of choices and therefore maximize stress? Or would you actually be going for something which would be the satisficer, which is just good enough?
Well, gosh, that's a good question. I am told that when I watch things or when I absorb information, that I tend to tune everything else out. And I think that's something that I learned to do when I was younger. And I fear for younger people who get bombarded with information, get shorter attention spans and stuff like that. So in terms of choices in life, I think I would say I was a maximizer in the sense that I would like to have lots of choice, but I think I'm quite good at being selective, so I don't really feel stressed by a lot of choices because I find myself quite confident in making the choices.
Well, you don't get to be head of College of Science, Dean of Faculty of Media, and responsible for the development of transnational education if you're going to get hyper-stressed about choices. Isn't that right, Professor David Cobham? Welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
Oh, thank you very much, Alex. That's a fantastic introduction. Choice is lovely, isn't it? It's lovely to have choices. But certainly in the academic world, there are lots of different avenues, aren't there, that you can pursue. So, we're very, very fortunate in that respect, I think. Absolutely.
Well, welcome back to, of course, your first Zoomer, David, because frequently in the past you used to be in the studio with me. We were there. Studio still stands, of course. We may return there one day, but the magic of Zoom, what's not to love?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always nice sitting in the studio because you can watch the to-ing and fro-ing of people as they come in and out of the building and wave to people as through the show. But I think we've all kind of got fairly used to this way of working now, haven't we?
I have suggested to our head of College of Arts, Abby Woods, that maybe she could consider just having various cardboard cutouts of the staff and indeed the presenters, and they could just be there and you could wave as you pass by. It's just a thought.
I think that could be a very dangerous avenue to pursue, Alex. I think you can't replace the human, can you?
Oh, I don't know. Let's not go there. Anyway, I could formally introduce you now to our ace actor, Jonathan Lindsley, who goes back to the 1980s with these shows, a whole range of experiences with that. And Jonathan, any questions you'd like to put to start off with, as we talked about a little bit about that maximization of choice and various other things, but anything you'd like to throw to David, who quite literally, when you talk transnationalism, David is your man.
Well, yes. Hello, David. Nice to meet you.
You too, Jonathan.
Thank you. I was very impressed. I've been reading your CV, well, your kind of biog on the website, and you have a fantastic range of skills, which amaze me. And you're very interested. I was very interested in one of the things you just said, actually, just now, about human contact and Zoom and generally the use of IT, generally the use of computers to communicate. Because for me, this is going to be a long question, but I don't mean it to be a long question. But a couple of weeks ago, I did my first public speaking on a Zoom call to an audience. And I found that quite disturbing because however good the signal is, you can only see a certain number of people on a screen at any one time. And you get kind of disembodied noises, laughs, and people get disturbed and stuff like that. So for me, it was very important to see reaction as a performer. And I wondered as a teacher, whether when you're teaching, you need to be able to see whether your students are actually listening to you and whether or not they're taking in what you're saying. Does that kind of human interaction more important than anything else, really?
It really is. And I think, you know, if you take the very formal, traditional lecture environment, for example. I think from the outside, people quite often think that's a very didactic, a very much a one-way presentation of thoughts and communication and so on. But actually, you know, in the biggest lecture theatres, you're constantly making eye contact with individuals around the room. You're trying to engage people either just through, you know, sort of body language and connection, or throwing out the odd question and so on. So I think actually in that physical lecture theatre environment, yes, it really is so important. And that's probably the most impersonal situations that we find ourselves in as teachers, if you like. But, you know, one of the problems that we find with the Zoom type lecture is that students will tend to turn their cameras off. And so you haven't got the faces necessarily looking back at you, and you're constantly trying to encourage them to say, oh, please do put your camera on. I want to see who's out there. And so that is an important part of being a teacher, that communication. Absolutely right. Yeah.
All I was going to ask you was is there any way of improving information technology in order to communicate better? I mean, we rely on a camera. It's a flat image, and we're seeing a recording. I mean, it's speech is fantastic. I mean, you can really hear what people are saying, and it's clear and all that kind of stuff. But I just wondered, is there any way of making the system more personal?
I'm sure there are, and I know there are people at the university that are much more qualified and experienced in this sort of thing than myself. But as you know, over the last 12 months, 18 months, you know, we've got more and more little features and, you know, emoticons and little extra things that we can put in so that, you know, you say something and somebody makes a comment and somebody does a thumbs up. And, you know, I think actually that in a way is a good substitute, because it is very dynamic, and probably more of that goes on interactive in a Zoom type call than perhaps does in the lecture environment. We had started to do things like the kind of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you know, push A, B, C, or D, and you throw a question out and get everybody to do a quick answer and have a quick bar chart behind you to show what people's thoughts are. So we were beginning to do more and more of these interactions through
Poll Everywhere. Is a wonderful device. I mean, it's literally Poll Everywhere. You get all sorts of things coming through on that system.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's getting there, isn't it? And I think you're right. I think it's very 2D and flat, isn't it, at the moment? But again, you know, we're getting more cameras that can follow the person around the lecture theatre. And I guess, you know, if you can get a little bit more of that sense of involvement and dynamism, that sort of thing, it will keep improving. But we always say, you know, no substitute for face-to-face and being together. But in my role, which is now much more about transnational education and delivering programmes over continents, we are looking more and more at the electronic mediation and, you know, do we have to fly around the world to deliver two or three lectures, or could we perhaps do it online and, you know, put those visits together into a more effective use and cut down on the travel and the carbon and so on. So, you know, lots of interesting things going on in education about how we use the technology better.
Oh, that's fascinating. I mean, I just wondered also, in your experience, do you think that the last 18 months of the lockdown and children not being able to attend school, be in the same classroom as each other and in front of a teacher, do you think that's been very damaging to the children's education, or do you think it's something that it's just an adaptation? We're going to have to adapt to that kind of teaching.
I'm sure at the secondary level there are really significant effects there. I think in higher education that we see, again, I think it has had a huge impact on students and how they, you know, just the experience of being a student at a university. You know, it's not just the educational bit, it's all the other things that go with it. So I'm sure there have been significant effects. I think, as I say, what it has done, though, it's given a real kickstart to lots of other initiatives and lots of other innovations. And as I say, although we might feel the gold standard is always to be face-to-face and together, we've suddenly found out that we don't always have to do it that way. And maybe a blend of the two, use one that's more appropriate in one situation and something else in another. We will never go back to exactly how we were before. We're going to do things differently just because of innovations and developments that have happened over the last couple of years. But we do worry about our students. You know, it's been hard for them. Being a student isn't just about going to lectures and classes, is it? It's about the whole building up of networks of friends and sports and societies and all those other things as well. So I think to be a university student over the last couple of years has been, it has been a challenging environment, no question about it.
That's very tough. I mean, they're using it I now cannot see my doctor anymore. I have to speak to my doctor on the telephone, and the NHS are using much more or much less face-to-face because of obviously the risk of infection, I suppose. I was just, again, what you were saying, in one of my jobs a while ago, I was in a film, a Pirates of the Caribbean film, and they used a lot of motion capture and 3D imagery to create us. And they developed a system without a green screen. So they developed a system of motion capture with which was the Industrial Light and Magic company, George Lucas's company. And he created a system where you could meet a real human being at the same time as you were projecting a monster, if you see what I mean. And I just thought required a triangulation of cameras, but also it created a 3D image or a sound, a picture that you could watch, in which you could interact with another person. And I wondered if some of that system would work in education. I mean, I wonder if you could sort of try for that.
Jonathan, I've often said that my students would respond so much better to my particular lectures if I could actually have a kind of metamorphosis with an octopus, you know, coming into that sort of like
an
octopus Alex side of things. Sort of that.
The only thing the animators can't do is they can't do your eyes and around your mouth, because expression is vital. And we have so many muscles around our mouths and eyes that animation or a computer-generated image won't look real enough to fool a human being into thinking they're watching. But if your eyes and mouth are moving like a human being would, then the rest of it sort of fits into your place. Your brain does the action for you, which is interesting. But I don't know if that's I don't know if it has an educational way of application, if you see what I mean. It just fascinates me, that kind of technology, how technology gets advanced, you know, because I can remember working with green screens behind me and having to pretend I was there with another actor and so on. And then gradually as we did some the various other things, you know, pirates, we became monster pirates without any effort at all on our part. We just wore a motion capture suit, which was interesting.
The opportunities, David, for as academic staff at the University of Lincoln, effectively actually becoming living avatars for our students, etc. I mean, immense, aren't they? Surely.
I think so. I think, as I said, we're always looking for innovation, and we've got some fantastic colleagues at the university that really specialise in these areas and are constantly looking for ways that we can improve how we deliver and how we teach. And that might be, it could be around helping students with particular learning disabilities, or that it could be for a whole raft of reasons to try and find more effective ways. But on a more sort of simple, mundane level, if you like, you know, if we are going to sit as we are, you know, even just, well, I've said sitting, I mean, we just assume that. I had an event a couple of months ago. We were signing an agreement with another European university, and we had a number of dignitaries and people on the meeting, probably about 20. And as I was kind of being the MC and hosting the thing, I thought, well, it's a very formal event. I just feel odd sitting down. I feel like I should be standing up, because, you know, as you kind of, it's got that formality to it. So I think it's the only meeting I've done that for, but it took no end of time to work out where to put the mouse and where to put this, that, and the other, and the camera. And then I think in the end, you know, I just shifted everything vertically a bit, and I think everybody didn't even realise I was standing up anyway. But there is that sense of, you know, you want that formality, and perhaps just always sitting looking at a webcam doesn't bring that, does it?
Don't know, David. As you can see, I'm currently addressing you from a beach location, so I think that's important in keeping the sort of Pirates of the Caribbean scenario. We've gone through Academy Awards things. Changing the background is one of the fun sort of activities. No end of
tides coming in behind you as well.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the story of my academic life, Jonathan. So between the two of us, I think David and myself have nearly clocked up 6 decades at the University of Lincoln. So there you are.
That's impressive.
So let's talk international approaches, David, because clearly COVID has massively impacted the last 18 months in terms of exchange, travel, etc. That seems to be changing now. The government have moved green list countries, other sort of issues taking place within that. Just share with us what kind of things we had to adapt as far as the University of Lincoln is concerned, and also how things can progress as we look to 2022, 2023, and so on.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, we've touched on some of this already, haven't we? I think, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, we wouldn't probably have even thought of delivering sessions remotely. And,
we thought about it, but we tended to actually have one experience of the equipment, in my case, Microsoft Skype, to be put off by life, basically.
Yes.
And just think, yeah, that's hopeless. It's just breaking down every second.
Exactly. Because it has to work for everybody, regardless of your, you know, technical abilities and so on. You've got to be able to walk in, everything's ready and works first time. But that's been, I guess, obviously the biggest change. We normally go out to our partners. We would do welcome talks when we start programs overseas. You know, we would be having people going over there during the semester, either teaching or visiting. We'd have meetings at the end of a semester where we look at student results, and so of course all of those things we've switched around to doing online. And you know, as I said, I think there are some elements that we will keep, because you know, it's actually better to do it that way. We reach more people and we're cutting down on the travel as well, so we've definitely adjusted in a number of ways. You know, one of the saddest things is we haven't been able to have the students physically exchanging, and you know, Alex, because you've been involved at both sides of this, haven't you, meeting the students, particularly from Malaysia, that have come across and they've come into your studio and done the sort of the letter from Lincoln back to home, and similarly our
audio students, letters back in the day. It'll all be visual now.
I can remember the reports from Penang Hill were always the centrepiece. So I think that's been a real shame that we haven't been able to facilitate that. But then along came virtual internships. So we've actually had quite a significant number of students now engage in an online work project. So they're connected to a business in their home country. This is UK students, you know, connected to a business in the partner country, and then they're working on realistic projects, and it can span a number of weeks. They get quite involved at a level of detail, and the feedback that we get from those students that engage in those virtual exchanges, virtual visits, virtual internships is fantastic. It's actually some of the best feedback we've had in all the things that we've done, and it's obviously, we've found a constituency of people that perhaps maybe were a bit afraid to travel, or, you know, just a little bit wary about spending a year or a semester in another country. But on these virtual projects, they've been able to throw themselves into it. They've met people from all around the world. They've done something constructive and tangible as part of the project, and they've come away really enriched. Now, again, I don't know that we would have necessarily gone down that route pre-pandemic, but now we've seen the success of that, we'll definitely do a lot more of it, because it reaches people that have got family commitments, or, you know, just can't travel for, you know, they need their part-time job and can't leave it for a period of time. So I think lots of reasons for continuing with that virtual experience, again, to enhance what we do physically.
Later on in today's programme, we're going to be featuring tech expert Susie Perry. Susie's been singing the praises of the recently released iPhone 13. Not great if you're afraid of the number 13, as I point out with Susie. But, I mean, David, as somebody who's obviously been connected with IT, are you an early adopter? Do you actually sort of say, great, I've got to have the latest edition all the time? Or do you actually have the more sort of eased back approach in terms of when the technology comes into place?
I think I've probably changed over time, Alex. I think as a younger enthusiast, I always was an early adopter. So you've dated us already. You've aged us already, Alex. So I go back to the old, and I'm very sad about Clive Sinclair's passing away this week. So the old Sinclair ZX, those old computers, I can remember getting hold of the first one of those. In fact, before I got my own, I remember going to a friend who had, do you remember the one? It didn't even have a proper keyboard. It was just sort of, you know, you push on a bit of a
cassette
panel,
tape. A cassette tape had everything. That's all you needed. A cassette tape, plug it in and go from there.
Might even have predated. Yeah, that's right. It was back in those days. I can remember going around to a friend who had this computer and showed me that if you pushed a button, it played a musical note. And I remember thinking, well, that's interesting. I said, but can you do chords? And he said, well, you can't actually do two notes at the same time. But if you play one note for a millisecond and then another one for a millisecond and then the first one for a millisecond and then the second one for a millisecond, it sounds like they're both playing at the same time. And I have to say, that was the thing, probably more than anything, that pushed me into a career in computer science, because that brought together, I already had an interest in music, and the thought that that technology could do something as clever as that. I mean, obviously, a year or two later, of course, every computer could play multiple notes and chords, and then you move on to that level. So I've always been kind of enthusiastic about technology, but really had to always solve a problem for me, not just to have the latest device, but, you know, what can we do with this then? As you say, get away from the cassette tapes, you know, oh, we can download from, you know, a server now. What can we do with that? How can we take that forward? So much more for pragmatic reasons. And that explains my sort of slightly aging phone that I have here now. But yeah.
It's if it works, you should obviously sustain it and make sure that the sustainability is well into place. So after all, Midweek Drive, Morning Edition and Midweek Drive shows didn't get where they are today by sort of ignoring this whole thing. Jonathan, we'll come to you because you've been busy recently getting back up to Yorkshire, of course, bypassing Lincoln. Bit of a shocker, yes. That, never mind. Based in Brighton. And you've been interviewed by, indeed, Jane McDonald. So share with us, why was she interviewing you and what was the whole process for?
Well, this is COVID related in a strange kind of way as well, because Jane McDonald, which many of your listeners will remember, did cruising with Jane and was on a lot of cruise ships, and I imagine that now that's quite
catch COVID with Jane. It's
yes,
the same
yes,
thing.
Exactly.
Different
you don't want to be doing that. So. So I think she's left Channel 5 and she's now I don't think this is a secret, she's doing a series of a television series for Yorkshire Television and it's going to be Jane McDonald's Yorkshire. So she's travelling around the county and going visiting places notable and memorable for people who know anything about Yorkshire. And one of the places that's notable and memorable is a television series that I made, was filmed in Holmfirth near Huddersfield. And the series was Last of the Summer Wine. There were
Let's just hold it there. David, you're nodding. Do you remember Last of the Summer Wine?
I can remember all the way back to the first episode, Alex. Yes,
oh,
that's definitely my era. Yeah.
Well, Summer Wine was something that I was involved with for about 10 years in the 80s. Mm. And I was in the cafe and playing a rather stupid, well, thick, basically, lad called Crusher. And Jane remembered that because she is probably of our era too. And I think the producers of the series thought it would be quite fun if she interviewed me outside the cafe saying, you know, what's it like to be here again? And do people still remember? And of course, the programme still goes out every day on UK Gold. So, and there are 285 episodes, so it's it takes quite a, and there are people who've watched everyone and just about remembered everyone as well, and I call them summer winos because they are addicted. And so the program is very popular, and yeah, so I traveled up to Yorkshire and sat outside the cafe, and the lovely Jane McDonald walked up to me and we had a chat about the past, really, and about how popular the series still is and how people still love it. And one of the things somebody said to me, which I thought was rather beautiful, which was this was a fan a couple of weeks previous to going up to Yorkshire. She said to me, I remember seeing you on television on a Sunday evening. It was straight after Songs of Praise. And every time I think of that, I can remember the smell of the crumpets that we toasted over the fire. I can remember my grandfather and what he said and how he laughed at different jokes in the programme. I can remember my grandmother, my mother, my father. She said it was a whole family thing. And I just thought how brilliant that is, to be part of a recollection that brings back an entire memory of a house, a family, and, you know, you were part of that, which I think, you know, nostalgia sometimes gets a bad rep. I think, you know, people look forward, and you were just talking about kind of early adopting new technology and moving on and all that. But there is a strong element of, and when you talked about Sinclair computers, I mean, I think I had a BBC Electron computer in the early days. And I can remember buying a computer from Dixon's, I think it was, on the high street. And I can remember being amazed. I'd be about 21, 22, something like that. And I walked out of the shop and I had a computer under my arm. And I was raised on computers in television shows that were whole rooms with revolving discs. And to destroy one, you had to pick up an axe or burn the building down.
It'd probably be in the basement, in air conditioned in the basement, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that was it, with servers, all that kind of stuff. So it's extraordinary how fast technology has moved, and it's extraordinary how much we've learned over the years. But it is nice to revisit some of those moments in our youth, and it's very important to get. So yes, that's why I was in Yorkshire talking to Jane MacDonald, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think the series will go out next year. And if anybody's watching, I hope they enjoy her trip round Yorkshire, because she's visited some fabulous places. I'm a Yorkshireman myself, you see. I was born in Wakefield.
We'll certainly watch that with great interest, Jonathan. So my wife lived for many years in Giggleswick and travelled across to Skipton. And, you know, so that's very much part of our...
I went to school in Skipton.
Yes.
I'm from Skipton. So that's my that's where I was raised. So, yeah, we used to play Giggleswick at rugby.
Right.
I was at Ermestead, so just down the road. So, it's a small world, isn't it, really?
No, it's a lovely, lovely, lovely part of the country. And is that going to be broadcast soon?
I think in the new year. I think they don't have a broadcast date yet. Obviously, they've got to finish the programme. And it's one of those things, I mean, you know, we're all experiencing this amazing COVID thing. I had to be part of the bubble travelling up. So I had to do a special PCR test before I was allowed to be within 6 feet of Jane. And there was all that going on. So I did a new COVID test. It was a spit test. And I've never done anything like that. It was a little test tube that I got sent by a courier. And they give you a little funnel and you have to spit into a thing. And it's and you shake it up and put it in an envelope. And that gets taken away by another courier. And then they give you your result within... I think it's 2 hours. They can tell you whether you're positive or negative. I don't know how accurate it is, but I think it's done for the insurance company more than for the more than for accuracy. You know, I think it's ticking the boxes on health and safety. I think that's what it is, really.
I certainly feel with you know, if we are, as people keep saying, having to live with the virus, we're going to have more sophisticated or actually simpler tests, aren't we? If we're going to have to test regularly, frequently, and pushing something up your nose and down your throat, I think is the novelty of that wore off pretty quickly.
Well, they tell you that if you touch the sides on the way in up your nose and down your throat, the whole test becomes invalid. So I was just like, I mean, it's very complicated. Life has become very complicated with COVID.
It's like having to live with Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, but still, never mind. I won't go political because that's another issue entirely. We're going to be featuring Ronnie Hazelhurst's theme to Last of the Summer Wine because I feel it's a nice, nostalgic, gentle moment to actually see us out. You both know the questions, but actually, Jonathan, you are senior co-presenter on this one because we go back even further than David and myself, actually. I mean, when we started off these shows, admittedly, we were there in the same studio. But would you like to throw the last two questions to David, please?
You're making me sound very old, Alex.
Well, no, let's delete that. As I said, we don't use the O word. We are experientially enhanced.
Can I be compo? That's a good idea. Can I be compo in this trio?
Please be compo. So, David, have you had a good time being on this show today? And given the chance of being invited back, would you come and do it again?
Well, I've had a very pleasant surprise and a really wonderful experience, and I will, with great delight, come back another time. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's most excellent.
And Jonathan, has it been good for you?
Very interesting, yes, and fascinating. It's been great to meet David, as I said, when I read his CV, I thought, here's a man whose brain I want to pick about so many things that he's a fascinating fellow to talk to. So I hope I get a chance to speak to him again.
Let's pick up on the BBC Micro next time. I can wax lyrical on that one. Certainly.
Oh, excellent, excellent,
brilliant.
It's a whole new world. Jonathan Lindsley and David Cobham, of course, the official principal fellow of the UK Higher Education Academy, and also associate PVC. That's Pro Vice Chancellor, in case you think it's another form of leather or something from that point of view. Associate Pro Vice Chancellor and Dean for Global Engagement. I presume, have we got the right title there, David?
They're all the right words, and they're all in the right order as well, Alex. Thank you very much for that.
Brilliant.
At the University of Lincoln, we salute you both. Take care now. Well, all the skies may be grey and the leaves may be turning brown, but we're still California streaming on a winter's day. I know there are very few people who will probably regret that Mamma Cassa reference, or indeed the Mamas and the Papas. Maybe Susie Perry possibly might, because she's such a wonderful all-round consolidation of matters technical and cultural and so on. It's always a delight to say, Susie Perry, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Hi, Alex. I totally got that reference straight away. I thought about it when they announced the title, actually, and I was wondering why they'd never done it before. Well, it's a beautiful song. I love the Mamas and the Papas, and also being a little older, of course.
Well, no, more chronologically gifted, Susie. We do not use the O word. That's the important thing, you know, or possibly
experience.
Yeah, experientially enhanced. One of those two things is actually there. Clearly, Steve Jobs will be looking down from wherever he happens to be, sort of say, yeah, it's good to see that Apple will still actually have a big event as they unveil another bit of new technology. So, Susie, has this lived up to what Steve Jobs would have liked his company to be developing and delivering?
Well, yes, the September event we've come to get used to now, haven't we, every year, of Apple making their announcements, particularly for their iPhones. Obviously, it was a virtual affair. There were no audience in there, but it was, as you would expect, slickly done and beautifully put together. They announced, of course, the four iPhones, iPhone 13, so the 13, the Mini, the Pro and the Pro Max. They also launched a couple of iPads, including a very good iPad Mini, which was in need of a big overhaul. They also talked about the new Apple Watch Series 7, which will have a bigger, brighter screen and faster charging, although we don't know when we're going to get our hands on that yet. No AirPods announcement. That was the only thing that I was a bit surprised about, so we have to wait for that. But as you would expect, Apple say that these are the most advanced smartphones that have ever been made, and with the new innovations and features that they announced, as you would expect.
Now, clearly, looking at some of the numbers here, I mean, Apple saw an estimated 57 million units sold worldwide over the sort of January to March 2021 period. That's an increase of 44% on the previous year. So the company's doing very well. For futurists who are obviously keen to embrace new tech and aspects within that, would you still counsel sometimes it's best to just wait until things have settled down, or is it a case of no, get yourself on 5G straight away?
I think 5G, you know, is good. Obviously, it's required now for the amount of features that we have on our phones, and you want to have the smoothest experience possible. So to have a 5G enabled phone, I think, is pretty vital now. You know, maybe last year, wait 12 months, but I think we're in a situation where you want that now, because EE have already announced that it's switching on compatible sites across the UK from next month, and they're the first network to do that in our country. And that will deliver a better coverage and a more improved indoor experience as well. So I think the fact that that the enhanced 5G performance is there compared even to last year's phone is important. And there are some other belt and braces things as well in terms of bigger storage, up to a terabyte, actually, if you go for the Pro range, which is extraordinary when you think about that for a phone. They've got a new Bionic chip. This is the A15 that they're using. They say it's 50% faster than the competition. But you'll get faster processing with that. So no lag, no glitches, and a better battery life.
Folk who suffer from Tristan Decaphobia, or the fear of the number 13, might have actually been conscious of the fact calling it an iPhone 13. I mean, why do you think buildings don't have a 13th floor? Could this all end in tears, Susie?
I don't think there's that many people around that have that, but I do recognise that some people do have a problem with that number. I hadn't really thought about that coming into this interview, I must admit, Alex. But I was more interested in the cinematic mode that they've introduced for their video and their cameras, which is using intelligent technology to change focus when people come in and out of frame or glance away from the camera. So you can actually pull focus now. So if you're into filming, whether it's your kids or your dogs or your cats or actually making movies on your phone, this is really, really cool feature to have. And they've also got a macro mode on the Pro and Pro Max. So if you are shooting anything that's very, very tiny, as close as 2 centimeters from the lens, you'll get a really good shot.
And actually, you've raised a really interesting point there, Susie, because clearly the use of a mobile phone to actually create your own images, create your own narratives and so on. I mean, we've heard a great deal over the last few years about Mojo, mobile journalism. More and more universities are actually running courses in terms of how to make movies on your phone and so on. And yet, the other end of the scale, you still get the big studios sort of saying, yes, we're going to invest heavily in studio space, etc. Is this the beginning of the end of the demise of the big screen studio, or do you think actually, no, we should get Kevin Feige to actually shoot his Marvel movies on iPhone 13?
I don't think we're quite there yet. Although, you know, who knows, in 5-10 years, maybe we will be. I think the blockbusters and the Hollywood epics will continue to be searching for studio space with the amount of the green screen that they need to use and all their enhanced features. So we're not there, but we are on a personal level if we want to make movies, because you can do your film, your footage, you can edit it, you can change it, you can enhance it. You know, there's a lot of brilliant features that you, well, you know, when you think back to how, for example, music was recorded back in the day on 8 tracks, and you get whole Beatles albums, and now you've got that on your phone. I mean, it is quite extraordinary what we are allowed to use, really, what we're enabled to use now with all the technology.
It's the one thing I think Arthur C. Clarke said that he didn't really predict at all, didn't think about in terms of 2001 and other things, was this shift to individual screen-based computers and all the other elements within that. So, I mean, Susie, wearing your futurist hat, where would you actually see the thing is developing? I think it's continually going to get smaller and smaller. I mean, we heard a few years ago about wearables, about the whole notion of technology where you charge it up using the actual movements of your clothes and the built-in aspects from that. Do you think Apple are kind of there yet, or is it still a case of, no, they still like to have technology as separate from the human body?
Well, I think you could look at the Apple Watch Series 7 that they announced last night, that's you know, the actual hardware itself has got a bigger, brighter screen and it charges faster, but that is very much in tune with the human body and uses technology to obviously be able to help a lot with exercise. And I think a lot of people during the lockdown jumped on that as well as using the screen to speak to people and communicate. So, you know, obviously sales are still on the up for those reasons. But yeah, I think wearable technology, I remember talking about it on the Gadget Show and it was so clunky back in those days. But now it's becoming much more. I think the glasses thing as well, I think that will come back. And we'll have a lot more information kind of being downloaded into our glasses as we do onto our watches now. It's slow, but when you kind of look back 5 years, you can see that there's been quite a big jump in wearable technology.
Pre-orders obviously starting. Prospective customers need to effectively understand what's included, whether they should upgrade. I mean, that wonderful word upgrade that can send fears down the spines of many IT sort of specialists to say, no, another upgrade, or indeed, you know, the sort of sad sinking feeling you get when your laptop says, just need to upgrade this a little bit. Do you think that's getting better, or is it just a case of stop the upgrades now?
I think it's getting better, and you know, I think they're remaining on top of that with their I think iOS 15 is about to come out, so you know, there's always a glitch somewhere, isn't there, really? I don't think there's ever been a perfect performance, but they remain on top of it. They bring in the new features, they extend the battery life, they give you more storage, and they help with the processor and the glitches. So I think they're staying on top of it. I don't think there's anything to worry about with this.
And where, Susie, would you point people to actually find out further details about the whole California streaming event?
It's all over the internet right now, but obviously you can go to apple.com, or if you're looking to buy this phone and you want to look at the good package, it's probably a good place to start is EE's full works plan, because you don't just get the iPhone, but you also get access to services like Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, and of course, Apple Arcade, which is great if you're a gamer.
It just goes to show what actually happened when Eve was tempted into actually having that apple back in the day. Oh, no, that was a different apple. That's a different line entirely, which is extraordinary. Susie, two final questions as ever to wrap up with. Have you had a reasonably interesting link with us on the midweek drive? Has it been an okay Zoomer for yourself?
Oh, it's been a most pleasurable Zoomer. Thank you very much.
Then the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you come back, Susie?
Oh, I'd love to come back. Please invite me. Thank you, Alex. Have a great day.